Yes, hello, this is Danhausen here, very nice for evil, and you are listening to Bob After Dark. Subscribe or be cursed.
From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in the night. I am your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever-wonderful, ever-vampiric, and ever-cape-wearing producer, my friend, my brother, and my producer himself, the heartthrob of Bob After Dark. That's what I totally forgot to say initially. Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey there, Bob. Yes, back here with another thrilling episode of Bob After Dark. If you're watching on the Jet TV, I'm all
you
turned out.
You look great this evening, sir.
Well, they usually put the camera right there, and now there's a camera in there, so I got to put the
I'm still getting used to my cadence, because I'm used to looking directly at you.
I don't know where to look anymore, Bob.
No, so I'm like, I keep my head to the side, because that way there I could kind of like look up at the camera, look over at you, and then look down at the computer all at once, you know?
Yeah, well, I think, do like a late night talk show. You got, when your monologue is going, you got to talk to the camera.
Yes.
Then I'm, I'll talk you after that. It's a whole special here, Bob.
Something like that.
Yeah.
All right, Count, what's been going on?
Not too bad, Bob. Weekend, I know we update. Were
we didn't have show last week.
No,
it's
show
the
last
annual
week.
Elections.
Elections, yes. They came and went. And I'm not, we don't talk about the election.
We are
here,
not talking about the election. We are not a political show.
But I'm glad this year they didn't say stop the count. I was so concerned about my well-being.
Badoots.
Get it? Okay. But anyway.
You know, you cracked that joke to me before the show.
I thought it was good.
And you sat there and you said it like three times and I didn't get it.
Oh.
It took me till now that I understand.
It's
yes,
funny, right?
Now I get it.
Stop the
count? It's hilarious.
Me. I'm the count.
It took me a while.
Stop him. I get nervous when I hear that because they would stop me. But there was none of that.
So it's weekend update.
Yeah, Bob. You know what? It's been like a whirlwind, it seems like, these days. Oh, Bob.
Uh-huh.
The count went to Florida.
Oh! How's Florida?
Well, you know, it's usually a little too humid for a vampire to go to Florida, but it was decent in November. High 80s in November, which we don't really get down here. But, you know, the count flew south, I guess you could say, for a few
days. Did you go to
Disney
or Universal or anything?
None of that touristy hoopla there, Bob. Just basically visit some friends in Newport Richie area, which is just kind of like a neighborhoods and whatnot. But I had a good time. I paddleboarded.
Yeah, I saw the pictures of you paddleboarding.
I ziplined.
That's fun.
You know what, though? The ziplining.
That looks a little scary for me.
Ziplining is fine, but there's obstacle courses in the sky, which, Bob, the count's getting up there. I don't know if I should be doing obstacle courses in the sky.
You know.
I should be laying on a beach somewhere, Bob.
I should just be laying somewhere, period, folks.
Yeah. But, you know, all in all, good to get up sometimes.
I have not seen you in a while because we had elections.
Yeah.
So, my quick update. 2 weeks ago, I didn't. 2 weeks ago, 24-hour stream for Extra Life. We raised $750 in that 24-hour
Congratulations.
Period. Thank you very much. And in that case, that put our total for the Bob After Dark contribution to Extra Life to $4,100 since May. And we have two more fundraisers to go for the year, which I'm looking forward to having ready for you guys.
Yeah, Bob, that's fantastic. I mean, people are really in the giving spirit, it seems like. And that's just great. But did you... 24 hours, Bob, is a long time.
We did not make it.
I was going to say, that's a very long time.
We made it about 17.
That's a long time.
My eyeball, like I'm still waking up at 5 a.m. every day.
Yeah.
Like since that, I'm still waking up at 5 a.m. every day.
Yeah.
You know,
we got to retool the system. Maybe, you get 8 hours and then 2 hours off, 8 hours on, 2 hours off.
We'll rework it for next year. Other than that, I've been taking care of mom. She's got a PICC line in right now, so I've been helping her get back and forth to doctors, which has been keeping me... I haven't done a whole lot lately, which is fine. Yeah. You know, that's one thing I've been doing. I've been working on my new book.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been pretty exciting. I don't have much details about that other than...
No title or no working title?
I have... it is something.
Behind the Thin Veil or something like that?
It is not a paranormal book per se. Oh, okay. It's a it is a cyberpunk urban fantasy story.
Okay.
I wrote a chapter of this thing when I got off of my surgery for my gallbladder. I went home. The next day I woke up, I'm still hopped up on the painkillers from the day before. And so I just disappeared in my office, and like 6 hours later I came out and I'm like, here's a chapter. I had a couple people read it, and they told me it's absolutely ridiculous. And I was told an amalgamation of five movies I watched like leading up to my surgery.
Yeah.
And it's coming along. I don't creative write anymore because it's like I have this.
Yeah.
There's not too much creative writing involved with Bob After Dark. Most creative writing I get is trying to send Count Panic a fun text. But I've been writing, and then I also have been doing a lot more tarot study lately.
Oh, this is the cards, Bob?
Yeah, the cards. So I could divination read, which is a little different. That's more symbology and like modern day things that any person could see, right?
Mm-hmm.
With symbols and stuff. Traditional tarot I could read, but I'm not very good at it. I'm okay at it. So the plan was for me to start, you know, teaching myself to do a little better and, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And how's that going?
It's not too bad.
Yeah.
It's weird to like making quizzes for myself in 2024 because I've been out of college now 10 years.
Yeah.
Which is a weird thing to say out loud. So in 10 years, I haven't thought about studying for a test or a quiz. Well, that's not true. I've done a couple things.
But yeah, your pilot's license.
Not my pilot, my doctorate.
That's right, too. Yeah. Well, so but you know, are these the types of things you kind of see when you're driving around? Like, hey, come get a reading and you stop.
Yeah, but I'm not that type.
You're not selling the stuff.
You know, if somebody reached out to me and they wanted me to do like a three-card spread just as like a, and I'm going to use this term incredibly loosely, folks, as a celebrity read. If people donate $5, I'll do a 3-card spread. Wow. If you donate to Extra Life or $1, I'll do like a 1-card pull for you. that's something.
Yeah, but it's kind of those things you got to be careful, right? Because if you pull a bad card, then people freak out.
There's no such thing as bad cards in tarot count. I mean, there's ones, but it's
like the Grim Reaper.
Death is actually a good card.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, you get death. That's a good card. The bad card's the Tower. You don't want the Tower. Tower talks about that there's either going to be a problem coming through that you're going to make it out. It's just going to be tough, and then there's a problem's coming, and it's going to be shaking you to the core.
Well, we should take that one out.
You can't just take a card out of the deck. And
take all the bad cards.
Yeah, take all the bad cards. Yeah. So just trying to reteach myself some stuff there.
What's the Reaper mean then?
Change.
Oh, okay.
Death meaning death to a certain situation.
Oh, all right, but you continue on though.
Anyway, so I've been working on just some tarot study, and that's just been where I'm at. I've gotten a rejuvenation for more paranormally things. So more of I am planning a paranormal investigation for 2025. That I don't normally ever plan myself. Those are usually things that, like,
you join them.
I get invited to these things, or I'll join another group. This is gonna be the first time I'm really looking into doing one with just people I select, which obviously you'd come with if you're interested.
So this is breaking news.
It's some kind of news. It's not doing a con out of it or anything, but it's just me and a group of people are gonna rent out. You remember we did the episode on the Whispers Estate, and we had Andy and what is his name? J.R. Racidas?
Yeah. Andy and J.R., yeah.
Yeah, when we had it, J.R. did the documentary about the Whispers Estate.
Oh, okay.
So I'm looking, I think that's the plan is to go there, because I've heard that place is pretty legit.
Yeah. Are we taking a van?
We got the van right there. Anyway.
Bob After Dark vehicle.
So, if this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark, we are your weekly-ish show where we talk about legends, lore, and the supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, and, of course, Count Panic's dream spot to check out that's supposedly haunted.
Wow, Bob. Dracula's Castle.
That's a good one. Transylvania.
It's a relative.
Yeah. That's your...
sure, we'll go there.
Kinfolk is the proper term.
Yeah. Makes sense. How about you?
Tower of London. That's on my list.
Okay.
They
don't let you in there, though, right?
No. And the Vatican.
They don't let you in there
either. I don't think they'd appreciate me going and knocking on their door. I don't think investigating the Vatican as it is just looking through their archives. Pope Francis, if you're listening, our Pope's Francis currently,
yes,
right?
Yeah, yeah,
I thought so. It's Pope Francis, I know you're a big fan of Bob After Dark. I know you're a massive fan of my show. Your boy is open to coming. I will fly to Vatican City on my own dime to come look through some of your archives, because apparently in there's esoteric knowledge, there's occult knowledge, and it's just itching to be learned.
We'll reach out to him.
I'll reach out. Yeah, I think he's just a
I'll find his email.
So how the show works is we have two parts of the show. The first part of the show is the weird spooky news of the week. That's where you, the fan, and me, the Bob, go scouring the internet for the unusual and strange news articles of the world. So anything like ghost encryptids and lights in the sky being reported in major media, high strangeness, or advances in science that borderline on science fiction. That's where that first part of the show would come in at. And we usually ask Count Panic for his hashtag panic stick. Yeah. I don't know why I'm losing my
thoughts. You're going to say hot take for a second.
No, the hashtag panic stick. Yeah. Sorry, folks. The thing is, when you've been doing this as long as we have, certain things are just muscle memory to come out of your mouth and you don't think about it. Tonight, I'm thinking about what I'm saying and I'm goofing everything up. But anyway, we get the hashtag panic stick. He's usually never prepped for one of these stories. We get what his raw take is. And then we dive into the lore of the week, which this week, it's a very special story, which we'll talk about later. But I was not planning to do this episode.
This is just a kind of off the
cuff. I literally put this together today.
Oh, my goodness.
Because somebody was asking questions. Yeah. Well, they didn't request it.
But. Oh, okay.
You ready to dive into some of our news stories?
Yeah.
All right. So our first one comes to us from the New York Post, written by Caitlin McCormack. Florida's unexplained ghost lights have been haunting unsuspecting drivers for six decades. Florida's inexplicable ghost lights phenomena has been haunting drivers for six decades and counting, still with no explanation for its cause as motorists prepare for its potential reappearance in the coming winter months. The Ovidio lights, O-V-I-E-D-O, have been reported on Snow Hill Road, a straight shot connecting Chuluta, C-H-U-U-O-T-A, to Geneva. Genevia, G-E-N-E-V-A, since the 1960s, according to local historian James Brine. The blue lights appear primarily in the winter, mostly often around midnight, and always approaching from the south on the end of the bridge towards the Econlocachi River. The lights make it appear as if there's an oncoming car except the brightness of a train headlight, and according to one blog post written by the historian. As terrifying as the image sounds, ghost lights legend has been passed down for decades and still used as a rumor mill for teenagers to spread a similar story, like Bloody Mary, Breyer said. You drive out there and sit in the middle of the night, drink a beer or whatever teenagers do, and look for these legendary lights, Brian told News 6. So there's literally generations of people who remember going there and taking a date or looking for some friends in search of these ghost lights. Because the open-ended nature of the legend, many have ascribed their own origin stories to explain the lights. Some are simple, like one that attributes the lights to a car crash that drowned two boys in a river. Others take more creative liberties, like a story that pins the lights to a Cub Scout that wandered from his troop with a lone lantern and was never seen again. The tragedies in the rumors, which specific in some cases, are unconfirmed. Brian's told News 6 that all of a sudden the tall tales told about the lights, only one have been verified. In 1963, 17-year-old Norbert Hyman drove across the bridge with three of his friends to set off some fireworks. When they finished, one of the friends returned to the car while the other three walked back to the main road. The friend who went to the car didn't turn the headlights on and drove down the main road towards the others. Two of the teens managed to get out of the way, but Hyman finally struck and fatally killed somebody on the way to the hospital. Whether you believe the root of this actual ghost story and this kid is haunting, if that's your way of believing, or whether you just think that it's a root ghost story that kicked off all these other stories, that, I guess, is up to the reader, he says. The most scientific explanation for this phenomena is tied to dead vegetation surrounding the lake, which can break down into highly combustible methane that may be the source of the bluish light or the will-o'-wisp phenomena, according to a local outlet. However, no one actually has tested the swamp gas theory, and there hasn't been any reports of a wisp in over a century. The only time wisps are mentioned during the modern day is more often than not Pokemon discussions, as the will-o'-wisp is a popular status move in video game. With no firm explanation, the community has accepted the unsolved mystery, as the folklore surrounding it has proven many provided families with stories to pass on through the generation. Hashtag panic steak.
Yeah, Bob. Again, I was just in Florida there, and I got to say, I got a report. I did not see this. This must have just passed me by. I was, you know, flying all night there. I didn't see anything. But Florida, you can see the stars clearly. So, I mean, mysterious lights in the sky, Bob. Very believable. Could be anything, Bob.
Could be anything.
But Florida's got some very clear skies. So you see a lot up there. I just didn't see these ghost lights.
No ghosts. But you weren't in that neck of the woods, though, were you?
But, you know, Florida.
It's all connected. Just one big thing. Did you see a skunk ape when you were out there?
I did not, Bob.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so let's move on to our next story, which comes to us from NBC Montana. This was actually sent in by Mark. This is written by Tatiana Carter. Bigfoot spotted during deer hunt in South Carolina.
Wow.
A police officer hunting deer in Newberry County, about 25 miles northwest of Columbia, South Carolina, is reported seeing a Bigfoot. The sighting occurred along a power line route roughly a half a mile from the Palmetto Trail, a popular hiking and biking path. The officer, identified only as the initials JM, described seeing a 7 to 7.5 foot tall human-like creature while sitting in a ground blind. According to JM, the creature had long brown hair, an ape-like face, and long arms. JM explained that he first heard a deep grunt followed by a stomp before spotting the figure in the bush. We watched each other for about 30 seconds, but it felt like forever, and he turned on and walked off. I'm a police officer, and I had no clue what to make of it. And at this point, as much as I don't want to admit it, I'm convinced I saw a Bigfoot. Mm. Matthew Moneymaker, president of the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, has classified this encounter as a Class A sighting.
Wow.
This classification means that the misinterpretation or the misidentification of other animals can be ruled out with greater confidence. The most recent Class A sighting was reported once again in South Carolina, which occurred in 2023, February 10th.
Wow.
Interesting stuff, Count Panic.
Yeah.
So we have two big A sightings in South Carolina, so that's pretty interesting. Hashtag Panic Steak.
Yeah, Bob. I mean, Bigfoot cases still going strong out there. And this Matt Moneymaker, I think he's a part of that show, Finding Bigfoot, which that show was always a bummer, though. My mom loved that show. But, Bob, spoiler, they never actually found Bigfoot. So I was kind of let down at each and every episode when they were trying to find Bigfoot, but they never found Bigfoot. But it sounds like there's a couple cases here in South Carolina where indeed Bigfoot might have been found. So
absolutely.
I want to see some proof, Bob.
You want to see some proof?
You got pictures?
No, the guy, it's just a report.
Oh, Bob.
Do we have a caller?
No.
Oh, you were looking.
No, I'm just saying, I want to see some pictures.
That's fair. All right, you ready for
this? I mean, do you would go by when people say, you got to believe people, right? We got to believe people, but doesn't you ever kind of feel like you got to see some pictures?
It's the important part of proof.
Yeah.
So, Count, I actually have one more news story for us tonight. And this one I found, and I actually wasn't going to do this because it's incredibly religious versus what we normally talk about. And that's fine. But I'm doing this for John, and I hope this is John calling.
Well, he might be on the air. I'll keep him on hold, though.
Keep him on hold. Can you pick up to find out and not tell me?
Okay.
I'll start reading this article because if it's John, I'll go from there. So this is from the College of Letters, Arts, and Sciences at USC Doornsnijfe, which is a religious university. How updated Vatican rules on validating supernatural appearances of Mary will affect the famed pilgrimage site of Medjuri. Was it him, by the way?
It's him. Okay, so to recap, because he might have missed some of those first
That's fine. Words. There is a news story. It's how updated Vatican rules on validating supernatural appearances of Mary will affect the famed pilgrimage site of Medjugorje.
Sure.
Medjugorje. I'm sure your John will be able to give me the correct
pronunciation. Sounds like a long word.
The Vatican has said that the pilgrimage to that area, a small town in Bosnia, can yield spiritual beliefs but refrain from calling apparitions genuinely supernatural. For over 40 years, six people from that small town in Bosnia have claimed to see and speak with the Virgin Mary. For almost as long, hordes of pilgrims have traveled to visit sites of Mary's appearance to observe the seer's daily trances. The Vatican has never approved the pilgrimage or issued an official judgment of the visionaries until right now. Scholars have shown that Christians have claimed to have seen Mary in dreams and visions since the 4th century. This particular writer said, "I have studied modern Marian apparitions for about 15 years and wrote a book about the American apparition. Reports of the Virgin Mary sightings escalated after 1800. Church leaders have rarely authenticated such claims. However, with the exception of some famous events, for example, in France and Portugal. Of the roughly 500 apparitions reported between 1900 and 2000, the Catholic Church only declared 10 of them as genuinely spiritual, based on the Church's exact requirements for authenticity. Earlier this year, the Dicastery of the Doctrine of Faith, formerly the Inquisition and now the Vatican Office responsible for protecting and promoting Catholicism, issued new norms for the discernment of alleged supernatural events. As a result, the Dicastery has declared that despite its previous skepticism, the pilgrimage to that city can still yield spiritual fruits. The decision does not mean, however, that the Dicastery believes that apparitions to be genuinely supernatural. Only the Pope can make that decision."
Pope decides.
Yes. "Still, both ruling and the way it came about are important changes of apparitions. There was a sighting on a small farm of this particular city where there was one in 1981. 14,000 people believe they saw the Blessed Mother in the sky. 43 years later, so the two witnesses claim that they saw and spoke to her daily and met her. Church officials have argued that the city's apparition since they began. They sent psychiatrists and physicians to examine the seers, tested if there was a child that did it, the children's grasp of the religion and observed their behaviors. So real quick, I have some guidelines here of what the past guidelines for discernment is. The Church has always had guidelines for discerning the truth of visions. A seer must be healthy and their visions must not contradict Catholic doctrine. Additionally, the seer must not seek profit or fame from their experiences or use visionary claims to pretext the exploitation. They must not spread a circuitan mentality that would subvert the Church's authority. Until now, local bishops investigated reports of supernatural phenomena in their diocese, then either declared them safe for Catholics or shut them down. Sometimes a complex case would lead the bishops to seek private help from the dicastery. The process varied from diocese to diocese and could take years to complete. 43 in the case of getting somebody out to go check out the small city in Bosnia. If the Church finds nothing troubling about the proclaimed visionary, Catholics are not allowed but required to believe in the vision. Are allowed to believe it, but they don't have to. They are allowed, but it's not required. The new norm. Dicastery's revised norms of discernment may be the response to an increasing Catholic claims of supernatural experience. Global media not only spread, but encourages reports of visions and apparitions. The newly revised norms make three important changes to the process. The first one, the new norms put the decision about supernatural phenomena in the hands of the dicastery. It streamlines the process and prevents local politics or any single bishop's opinions from clouding final assessment of the declared apparition. Second, the dicastery has reduced an assessment of visions to one of six outcomes. The least positive decision is there's nothing supernatural going on. The most important, the most positive ruling, short of the Pope's office declaration that the phenomena is unarguably supernatural, is the Nihil obstat, meaning nothing hinders. This means that the event presents many signs of the action of the Holy Spirit, and the visionary shows no serious flaws that would prevent Catholics from supporting this phenomena. The third is that the apparition can be a genuine, even if the alleged seers made minor errors in the interpretation or behavior. It recognizes that visionaries sometimes cannot properly articulate what they see, or they may misinterpret Mary, for instance, suggesting Mary is angry for those who ignore her warnings. Seers need not be perfect Catholics either. Hashtag panic. Well, let's take John's call.
Sure, we'll take that right now.
John, you're on the air.
Hey, Rob, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good. I'm glad you called when you did, John. I picked the story out just for you.
Yeah, well, first of all, congratulations on that money you raised for the fundraiser.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's quite a bit of money there. And the policeman that encountered the Bigfoot, you said he was kind of like staring at him for 30 seconds, and he believed that he really did see the Bigfoot there, right?
Yep.
But isn't that what everybody thinks, Bob? You know, when they and I'm gonna relate this with the apparitions. I mean, you know, if I see an apparition of the Blessed Virgin Mary, you know, to me it's real. I don't know. I'm not necessarily, even as a Catholic, going to go by what the Pope thinks or, you know, what a team of priests or religious, whatever, you know, has to say. I mean, if I seen it, I have no reason to make it up. You know what,
sure,
I'm saying? Why would they put my trust in in the Pope? Where I seen it, you know, why would anybody debunk that? You know, I didn't.
Well, there
see
goes the Pope.
I was going, John. You just the Pope ain't coming on.
We
now.
Were trying to get the Pope on. Next
the Pope.
Week
the Pope just said, "Hey, gee, thanks."
Well, you know, I mean, the Pope, yeah, he kind of takes the place of God on earth, but, you know, he's human.
John is my type of...
He's got his followers, and he doesn't. You know, it's like anybody else. I mean, I'm not bowing down to the Pope, or I'm not going to take his, you know, word for everything. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, you believe, you don't believe. I mean, you know, you're a ghost hunter. I mean, you know, you believe in things, right? I mean,
I think for it, in this case, with it being a religious thing, right? If you've seen a ghost and the, you know, Catholic Church just kind of shrugs their shoulders, it's one thing. But seeing the Blessed Mother is kind of like a big deal. So, you know, I'm assuming they probably don't want to have like a mass hysteria moment where the Pope's like, you know, I don't really picture it as the Blessed Mother. I think this is just swamp gas. You know, I'm assuming
Bob, I wonder sometimes why they think that way too. I mean, you know,
my assumption, John, and keep in mind, I'm not the Pope. I would just play him on TV, I guess, occasionally. As far as that, and this is just pure speculation. I can't speak for the Catholic Church, but they don't want to cause mass hysteria. Hey guys, this, for example, you're familiar with the toast story, the burnt crust on the toast.
Yeah, right. That had the image. Right.
My assumption is that they try to keep as much mass hysteria moments like that down, because it's like, you know, you lose a little validity saying everything is a sign or if that is or isn't. But then again, it's like, you know, it's no different than the government trying to hide other things from us in general, too. It's like, how many times can you deny this before you could legitimately look at it and be like, yeah, that's probably a phenomenon. I'm right there with you, John. And I think it's really important that you think outside the box than just what, you know, you're told. That,
well, like I say, how long can you investigate? Everything's got to take a long investigation. I mean, you know, they want you to believe in God and the Virgin Mary and stuff like that. And then, you know, if somebody doesn't have to be Catholic, but, you know, well, you don't have to be religious, I guess. I mean, because the Blessed Virgin could appear to anybody to convert somebody, you know, going the wrong direction, whatever reason. I mean, but, geez, the whole process of, you know, figuring out if they really seen it or, you know, And then, you know, it probably gets lost in the transition after a while anyway, and it's sure. forgotten, right? You know, but I don't know. I just, I don't know. I, you know, I'm just, you know, the whole Pope thing that, you know, his final word is a say-so, and, you know, that's it. And, you
that's
know, take it or leave it or, you know, that kind of thing. I'm not for that, you know.
Oh, I understand, John. And I appreciate you. I'm glad you called in when you did, because whenever I find something that relates to a miracle or on the Catholicism side, I always try to put it in there. One, it's nice to think of my dad, because my dad was super into those thoughts. But I always appreciate getting your opinion on them, because you're a practicing Catholic. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and I believe it's Matagori.
Oh, thank you. John, I appreciate that.
You see, where were we at? Were we close?
You can't say I'm not listening to you.
No, I was not close at all. Thanks, John.
Well, it is tough to pronounce the way it's spelled, you know. But I, you know, I've heard of the word. Heard the word before, so, you know, it's not something that.
Oh, I appreciate it. Guys, don't listen to me. Listen to John. He's the guy.
But hey, I hope I didn't blow your chances of getting the Pope on the air.
I don't think he's coming on now. John, to be fair, I think Tuesday's at 9 p.m. Vatican City time, whatever that is. I'm assuming it's tomorrow. I'm assuming the Pope's got better things to do than listen to a paranormal radio show.
Well, you know.
I think that's his bingo night, Bob.
That's his. Does the Pope play bingo?
Yeah.
Yeah, it might be his bingo night. I mean, I hope he's doing something. Well, no, I shouldn't say that. You know, I want him to listen to your show, so, you know. Right. I don't want to say I hope he's doing something different other than listening to your show.
Yeah, he might be.
But, yeah, Bob, oh, hey, it's great to hear you again. And, you know, sounds like you're feeling well and, you know.
Doing the best I can.
Day by day, like they say, right?
Never ends. Now, John, I appreciate you calling in as always.
Okay, Bob. We'll see. You take care of yourself.
You too. Thank you. Folks, do you want to be like John? You can call in. Make Count Panic do some work.
That number? He's got 219-845-1100. He's got to be doing some. He might listen to the radio. Who's to say he doesn't get WJLB in, you know, the Vatican?
Now, you have actually witnessed what the Catholics would believe is a miracle.
I mean, the tree. Yeah, the East Chicago. Yeah, John saw that as well back in the day in East Chicago.
Did the church take a stance on that? Do you remember how
I don't think there was much of a... I don't know.
Or the Diocese of Gary, interested
I was
in
a kid, but I do remember the trees. I remember one tree, you could see the vision of Mary, and then the other tree, you could see the vision of Jesus. And I saw it as a kid. I know a lot of people, other people saw it too. It was pretty impressive, Bob. How does everybody see that?
I had a missionary come up to me once. I was at I was actually on my way to see a concert. It was the Ghostbusters Orchestra, which was weird. I was in a parking lot waiting for Queen of the Night, and I was in my Ghostbusters gear, and these two women pull up, and they're like, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I went through the spiel of being a Ghostbuster, and then they looked at me and they're like, "Do you believe in God?" And I was thinking they were talking about like the Ghostbusters line, you know? And so I played it off, and then they're like, no, you don't understand. We're such and such, because then we were talking about like the paranormal briefly. And they were, I remember the phrase that they gave me, and this is an interesting story. They were like, "We just got done investigating the Bible that leaks oil."
The Bible that leaks oil.
And I just told them, I said, "That sounds messy." Yeah, and they stared at me like I had three heads.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, I guess they didn't want me a part of that miracle that day.
I guess
day.
You
like,
were out.
Here I am, like, this Bible's leaking oil, and here I am with paper towels being like, "Hey, guys, careful. You don't want to trip and fall."
I mean, that, Bob, you missed the calling there. Hey, Bob, we got a couple phone calls.
Oh, let's take the next one.
We got two on. We'll take the first one first here.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, it's Cousin Al. How are you doing today?
Hey Cousin, how's it going?
Good. Listen. Okay, for verification, just so you guys know, I was out in Valparaiso, and I saw that light, and I got the witness with me that saw the same light in the sky that was spinning circles on all sorts of crazy stuff.
In Valparaiso here?
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice.
So we see, Bob, you don't have to go to Florida.
I don't need to go to Florida. I got it here.
Yeah.
Okay, it's my friend Jackson. Yeah, he did see it. he's a teenager. Okay, so listen, so I did get it on videotape, and I am going to get it over to you. What are you guys discussing tonight?
We're going to be talking about spiritual communications as soon as we finish up with the news stories.
Okay, but yeah. Like spiritual communication to the other side.
Yeah, so things, tools and methods that you would use to communicate with the dead.
And Bob just thought of this topic today.
Today, yes, so we'll get to that in a moment.
Very good. Well, I will be listening, and you guys have a good night.
All right.
So much appreciation.
Yeah, very cool.
All right, next caller.
You know, the lights in the sky, Bob, Valpo.
I'm telling you, man. People said they
heard something about Kautz, too, I know.
Kautz and Valpo are near each other, right?
They are. Oh, they are, yes. I'm close there.
Caller, you're caller number three. You're on the air.
And Bob just thought of this topic today.
Somebody's got the radio on.
Hello.
Yeah, hello.
Hi there.
Hey, this is John again. I want to pull a mulligan.
Hey, John, you can do a mulligan. That's fine. What's going on, John?
No, getting back to that that tree apparition, whatever you want to call
it. Yes.
Yeah, you asked the con about it. I did ask a priest about that. And it kind of went in one year and out the other year. They didn't want to. I didn't get no answer at all, to be honest with you. So I asked a deacon that lived in the neighborhood. And he says, you know, because I asked him, I said, you know, I talked to Father so-and-so. And, you know, he said, well, the bishops don't want to, like you were just saying, they don't want to get really involved in something like that. You know, maybe like, you know, you stated before, to cause a mass hysteria or something. But, so, yeah, that's. I hope I answered your question
you
on
did,
that
John,
one.
John, I appreciate
they
you calling
didn't think
back
much of the whole situation. Yeah,
they didn't think much of it.
But, I mean, how do you? They got to acknowledge it, I would think, but I don't know.
Oh, thanks for calling back,
all right, Bob.
I appreciate you.
All right, see ya.
I was a kid when that was going on, he was going directly to the priest and the deacons and whatnot.
All right, Count. I didn't get your take on this, by the way. So hashtag panics take, and we'll move on to the.
What were we talking about here, Bob?
The
I know. Yeah.
Yes. The new.
No, Bob. But you know, I believe all that stuff. I mean,
and
I believe
that's,
people see it.
You're, you know, being a baptized Catholic, your job is to kind of think about a miracle and what it would be to actually appear, you know, see one in person.
Who am I to? I mean, those trees. What a.
Exactly.
I know what
you know,
I
get.
Trees.
I get it. Where it's coming from, and. I got to agree with John. It's hard to sit there and be told, you know, if that's your religion and that's what you're building up to, you have a singular human being like, I got to see it to believe it. That's kind of a rough thing. Like, how do you take that away from
somebody?
Yeah,
you know, I bet we could have got Pope John Paul on, you know.
If my dad was still alive, you would have just made his day. I mean, he probably heard him being happy having a day there with hearing that, but still.
He's with Pope John Paul now.
That's the good Pope. Remember, every Polish Catholic family has that guy somewhere in the house.
We still remember John Paul II as the current.
You know, that's my dad to the day he died would have told you that Pope John Paul II was still the president.
Yeah.
Or not the president, not the Pope.
The Pope.
He would have believed he was the president.
He should have been both.
That's another thing.
He could have been both.
Anyway, Count, let's take a quick break for our live fans. We'll be right back into our podcast fans. You're about to be hearing words from a show that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
I'm folklorist and author Mark Muncy.
And I'm author Erica Lance.
And we host Eerie Travels.
It's a podcast where we discuss all things strange and unusual.
We discuss everything from Bigfoot to UFOs.
From Mothman to haunted locations.
From hidden history to legendary beasts.
From Cocaine Bear to the Jersey Devil.
From Holler Monsters to conspiracy theory.
We interview amazing guests that are actual investigators into the things that many believe to only be in the world of the imagination.
We also get into verbal debates about which monsters would win in a fight.
If any of this sounds interesting to you, then join us twice a week on your favorite podcast platform.
So look for Eerie Travels, and we'll see you on the other side.
And we're back.
Oh.
Hi, Count.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. You?
Doing good. What'd you do during break, Count?
During the break, Bob. Oh, man. During the break, I went back to Florida for a little more paddle boating.
That's good. Did you have a good time?
I did, Bob.
You know, I took up a new hobby.
Couldn't see my reflection in the water, by the way.
It's not a mirror, though.
Vampire.
Vampires aren't supposed to be able to cross
running. Can we see ourselves in water?
Yeah, but you're not supposed to be able to cross running water either. Oh, that's like a whole piece of vampire lore.
I think I broke the rules, Bob. I was in the running water.
That's not good. Anyway, Count, so would you like to know what I did during break?
What'd you do, Bob?
You know, I took up a new hobby, Count.
What is it?
Competitive beach volleyball.
You were on the beach.
I was on some sand. Yeah. I was number 5 NA.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. What made you want to get into this?
I was walking and I thought about sand.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get in the spike ball, but the volleyball net was already set up, so I just joined and became number 5 NA.
There you go, Bob.
I was 3 away from becoming for the, you know, the Olympic qualifiers.
You were close.
It's close.
There's always next year.
So today I have we're ripped right from the pages of Dr. Ben Vanerson. We are looking at the lore of the week this week, and I need you to know that I had the lore of the week done and over with, and I was set. Until a question comes in from our old pal, the Stick Switch, James from Peoria.
Okay.
We were talking about, because I'm looking to buy some paranormal equipment, and we were talking about spirit boxes. And I was like, oh man, you know, I need to get some shooting muffs. I would like to be able to do my own Estes methods. And James, no fault of his own, said, what's an Estes method, essentially? And so I was like, I'm curious how many people actually know what that is either.
I don't know.
So today, Estes method is one of the ways that we as investigators would use to try to communicate with the dead. I have 3 things here this week. We're going to be talking about a very brief history of the Ouija board. We have pendulum speak, which is when you use your pendulum to have a conversation.
Okay.
And we'll be talking about the Estes method. All right, so hey. 3 forms of spiritual communication.
Buckle in.
All right. So we're going to talk about pendulums first because that's my first tab I have open. This is from IamTheGoddess.com or GoddessIam.com. Pendulum dowsing, unveiling the ancient art of divination. Pendulum dowsing is an ancient and intriguing form of divination that has captured human fascination for centuries. Its origins can be traced back to ancient civilizations where individuals sought to harness the nature's world's energies to gain insights, guidance, and answers to their questions. Through the rhythmic swings of a suspended pendulum, practitioners have attempted to tap into unseen forces that unravel the mysteries of the universe. This history explores the evolution and cultural significance of pendulum dowsing through the ages. This is where it begins in the ancient times. The roots of the pendulum dowsing could be traced back to ancient civilizations where early practitioners utilized simple tools like rock stones, weighted objects, suspended on a string to access knowledge beyond the physical realm. Archaeological discoveries in ancient Mesopotamia and Egypt revealed pendulum-like objects for various purposes, including dowsing for water sources, predicting harvest, and communicating with the divine. In ancient Mesopotamia, an area known as the Cradle of Civilization, pendulum-like instruments were employed to locate sources of water and mineral deposits. These tools were essentially for survival and guided the early Argarian societies in selecting fertile lands for cultivation. During the medieval and Renaissance periods, pendulum dowsing gained traction across Europe. Dowsing rods, essentially elongated pendulums, were used to detect minerals, metals, and even hidden treasures. Diviners believed that the movement of the dowsing rods was not influenced by the presence of the specific materials in the ground. By the 17th century, the practice of dowsing expanded beyond mining and water divination. It was used to seek answers to personal and spiritual questions, often involving the aid of a pendulum. The pendulum movement was thought to be influenced by spiritual or cosmic energies, allowing individuals to gain insights and guidance. In the early 19th and 20th centuries, saw a resurgence of interest in spiritualism and esoteric practices, fueling a renaissance of dowsing and pendulum use. Spirituals believe that the pendulum can act as a communication tool between the physical world and the spiritual realm. Dowsers and mediums utilize pendulums to channel energies, communicate with spirits, and conduct seances. Dowsing also gained popularity within various esoteric and occult circles during this time. Influential figures such as Samuel Lytle McGregor Mathers, the co-founder of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, integrated pendulum use into their magic practices, further cementing its status as a tool of divination and spiritual explanation. Into the modern era, in the late 20th century and 21st, pendulum dowsing continued to evolve and adapt. It has found a place within the New Age movement, gaining traction and purported ability to provide insights to one's subconscious mind aid in decision-making, and offer guidance with various life matters. Modern practitioners often use pendulum dowsings for healing, energy work, chakra balancing, and uncovering personal truths. The pendulum motion and the interpretations of its swing can be believed to reflect the energy patterns and vibrations within the practitioner and their environment. Some practitioners use charts or boards with specific categories or responses to facilitate more structured and precise readings. Despite its historical and contemporary popularity, pendulum dowsing remains a topic of skepticism and controversy within the scientific community. Skeptics argue that the movement of the pendulum is influenced by involuntary muscle movements or idiomotor responses rather than external energies or divine guidance. Scientific investigations into pendulum dowsing typically attribute its success to unconscious cues or subconscious thoughts. However, proponents of the practice assert that the pendulum taps into a deeper intuitive understanding of the universe. In conclusion with that, pendulum dowsing has a rich and diverse history deeply ingrained in human civilization, spanning ancient civilizations to modern-day spiritual seekers. Whether viewed as a practical tool for finding water sources, an instrument for locating hidden minerals, or conduit for the divine guidance, the pendulum sways continues to captivate and inspire individuals seeking insights, answers, and connections within the mystery of the unknown. While skeptics question its validity, the allure of pendulum dowsing persists and remains an integral part of the diverse tapestry of human divination and spiritual practices. So what I mean by the pendulum, I usually wear mine around my neck. I have a quartz pendulum.
Okay.
Now, different strokes for different folks. So some people,
what are you talking about?
Some people have what they call is the plate. And what it is you take your pendulum, you usually hold it in whatever finger, different practices, different folks, and you dangle the pendulum by the string over the plate.
I've seen this.
And the plate, yeah, you've seen, yeah. We've used it before.
Of course.
And there's the compass, and the compass has like a yes, no, maybe, I don't know.
Yep.
And the idea is that the pendulum will spin in a direction and land, you know, point in the spot where the answer would go. The other one I've seen is people suspend it with a bit of wood and a magnet, and they'll push it, and the magnet will spin the pendulum around, and when it stops, it'll go in a direction of the answer that it's supposed to go to. That is like the oldest form of spiritual communication is through pendulums. I've seen them get made out of black onyx. I have mine made out of rose quartz, or just quartz. I've seen them being made out of rose quartz, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, when I just did my tours at the Roth House, I had a group of psychic mediums come in, and they were using their pendulums out on the investigations as well.
You can't really do that outside, though, can you? Because if there's a little wind or
can it make it screw that up. That could, air conditioning can screw that up, too.
So you got to be really in a room that has nothing, no elements.
Yes, and then you also have to keep your hand steady.
Ah, see, I couldn't do it then.
Oh. I can do pendulum readings. I'm okay at it. I've done some communication in the past. And then certain cultures will believe that, you know, in order to see if you're in the presence of something, your pendulum may spin in a counterclockwise if it's a dark energy, or spin clockwise if it's a light energy. Mm. That's just different. Like I said, different things.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. All right. So that's pendulums, pendulum readings in a nutshell. The next one I want to talk about is the Ouija board.
Which, oh, now this is the most famous, probably, right?
I would say it is the most famous tool of paranormal communications ever made. Now,
ever made.
This one's from the Smithsonian. The Smithsonian magazine has an article here that says the Ouija board can't connect us to paranormal forces, but it can tell us a lot about psychology, grief, and uncertainty. In the late 1800s, advertisements for a new paranormal product started appearing in papers. Ouija, the wonderful talking board, boomed a Pittsburgh toy and novelty shop, describing its magical device that answered questions concerning the past, present, and future with marvelous accuracy, and provided a link which unites the known and the unknown, the material and the immaterial, as above, so below. Another advertisement in a New York newspaper declared it interesting and mysterious, and testified that it has proven at the patent office before patent was even allowed. Price, $1.50.
Wow.
Do you know how much those boards cost now?
How much?
Hundreds.
Those Ouija boards. Yeah.
Hundreds, yeah, yeah. thousands I've seen these things go up to. I have a collection of them, me and Vix do, but...
These aren't the ones they're selling at, like, a Walmart or anything.
I mean, they are. Some people use those. I have a couple of, like, the generic Walmart...
Did you ever... well, continue on. I'll ask you.
So the mysterious talking board was basically what's sold in stores today, a flat wooden board with letters and an alphabet arranged in two semicircles. Above the numbers 0 through 9, the words yes and no appear in the utmost corners, while goodbye is printed at the bottom, and the board comes with the planchet, a tear-draped device usually with a small window in its body to use to maneuver around the board. The idea was that two or more people would sit around the board, place their fingertips on the planchet, pose a question, watch dumbfounded as the planchet moved from letter to letter, spelling out answers seemingly of its own accord. Today, the Ouija board game's design is similar, though the boards can come in other materials other than wood, like plastic. Are Ouija boards real? Does a Ouija mean? Through the truth in advertising is hard to come by, especially in products from the 19th century, the mystical device was interesting and mysterious. It's actually been proven to work at the patent office before patent was allowed, and today even psychologists believe that it may offer a link to the known and the unknown. The Ouija board's history is just about as mysterious as how the game works. Ouija historian Robert Merck has been researching the story of the board since 1992 when he first purchased a copy. At the time, he says no one knows anything about its origins, and it struck him as odd. For such an iconic thing that strikes both fear and wonder into American culture, how can no one know where it comes from? The Ouija board, in fact, came straight from the American 19th century obsession with spiritualism, the belief that the dead are able to communicate with the living. The beginning of the modern spiritualism in America often linked to an incident in upstate New York in 1948. Two sisters, Kate and Maggie Fox, claimed that they had received messages from spirits who rapped on the walls in order to answer questions, later recreating this feat of channeling in parlors across the state. Aided by the stories about the celebrity sisters other than spiritualists, the movement reached millions of adherents in the years that followed. By the way, guys, I'm standing up. I was feeling a little stressed. We got a caller.
That's fine. You can feel stressed about
physical stress. Like my body felt a little uncomfortable. No, we're good. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey there, it's Lori.
Hey.
Hi, Lori. How's it going?
So, it's going. So we're still on the topic of Ouija boards, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So I got a funny little, it's very like sad funny, but me and my friend, like back in the day, you know, middle schoolers want to try out all this, you know, get into whatever mess that they're going to get into. So me and my best friend decided to try a Ouija board, and it was one of those that you buy at Walmart. It glew in the dark. It was really cool looking. But so I know there's that theory that, you know, you're moving the, help me out, Bob. What's that?
The planchet. Thing called?
Yes, the planchet. So, someone in your group is the one moving it, trying to trick the others. But this particular best friend, I trusted her completely. She would not move that thing not even to be funny or to mess with me, and we got it to move. And I was the same way. I wasn't making it move. I wasn't doing anything. And the funny part about the end of this is the very last thing, we didn't say goodbye, so we never actually shut out the conversation. Yeah, I don't know if that's why my life has been so full of bad luck or what. But
is
it was
a big deal, Bob, if they don't say bye. To
it's kind of half the
you
problem.
You got to do it.
Yeah, you always have to close the communication or the portal.
So they're out
exactly.
Here still.
Yeah, that's right. Why half the haunted locations are actually haunted, because people, like our caller here, decided to summon something and not send it back.
Summon a demon.
It doesn't have to be a demon, but there definitely could be something. There could definitely be something attached.
Yeah. Right. Well,
so
I was at her old house, we're not friends anymore, so that works out.
Well, now, can Lori go back to the board and say bye?
No. It's too late now.
Too late.
Though, I mean, now it's just time for a cleansing, you know.
Oh, okay.
It's cleansing and trying to get to the bottom of it, which, you know, we offer here at Bob After Dark basic spiritual cleansings. Count Panic'll crack a couple jokes while I actually do all the work.
Yeah, I don't know how to do it.
No.
Well, that, yeah, that's definitely something. So I just remember, next time we see each other, there was a Ouija board I didn't say goodbye to. Like,
yeah, I don't want to be around you now. I think that's
great. Yeah, I know. So
we'll be all right.
You know, like, and then you hear those stories about people who try to throw out their Ouija boards, like the old-fashioned, really old wood ones. And then somehow appears back in their house.
Which is unfortunate. You don't have to throw them out, people. Just give them to me. I'll take them all. Give them all. They, you know,
but they don't say, what they don't say bye to them.
Then they could come home with me. Listen, I have a method, right? Would you like to know, Laura, you want to hear my method? You want to hear my method of bringing home a new Ouija board? I get the Ouija board and I sit it outside on the porch.
Yeah.
And I point at it and I say, now you think about what you did before you come in my house. And I either make it sweat it out or I make it cold it out before I bring it in.
So you can bully.
It's not a bully as it is just asserting dominance. Oh, okay. And I'm not much of that type of person.
You're using the sunlight to
cleanse it.
Charge it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cleanse, charge, all that good stuff.
Exactly. I use the moonlight to do its thing. It learns its lesson. I usually leave it out there for about a week and I'll be like, now you can come in the house.
Yeah. Now you can come in.
Now you can come
in. And you have like a bowl of food for it, food and water.
They're everywhere. It's kind of ridiculous at this point, but I do have quite a bit of them. Yeah. But yeah, folks, you got one, you want to get rid of it. I'm your guy.
With you?
I've actually had fans gift me them, and I have another one on its way.
They always say about burning the Ouija board, too.
Why are you wasting? You're going to burn such a cool thing? Don't do that. I'll take it.
Don't burn your Ouija board.
You're going to release. Burning things doesn't actually do anything. In fact, it kind of makes it more upset.
Yeah.
Or you could just give it to me.
Okay.
I'll take it.
Right?
Well, there you go.
Except the dolls. I don't want no dolls. I'll take the Ouija boards. I don't want no dolls.
There you go.
Yeah, I forgot. No doubt. But we should go on Facebook Marketplace and see if
there's probably a bunch on
there. I am sure.
Any Ouija boards.
Look,
on
Twitch sometimes we do haunted eBay shopping. Do you know how many haunted spirit boards we find on eBay when we do those haunted eBay shoppings?
I can imagine.
Yes.
And boxes and dolls and thinking of other things that are commonly haunted. But. All right. Well, now I'm curious. So after the show's done, I might do some haunted eBay.
Or you could wait for my stream and watch me do it.
That's true, but it's like Bob Ross. I got to do it over here on my side while you're doing it on your side.
That's fair. Well, thank you so much for calling in, lawyer. We appreciate it.
All right. Love you guys.
Thanks. Appreciate you. Have a good one.
Take care. Now, here's the thing, Bob,
uh-huh.
about this whole situation. I was going to ask you beforehand, this is my question, are you freaked out by the fact, the fact that they were sold at a Walmart, Toys R Us, Target, should we be giving this to our kids? It's not Monopoly, it's not Checkers, it opens up other dimensions.
What if I was to tell you
what
that it is a piece of wood or a piece of plastic? I have used them.
You're downplaying the power of the Ouija board?
The Ouija board, guys, has no power. It's a piece of wood or a piece of plywood or a piece of plaster wood, whatever it might be. And it's got a plastic or wooden triangle teardrop thing that comes with it.
Some of the demons.
The board itself isn't evil. It works when you have power people there actually performing the correct thing to make it work. You know, couple of kids sitting down around one. You know, chances are the only time that's... You hear these stories, and I use those terms, stories, really loosely. Yeah. Man, those... It's a board, my man.
Here's the thing, though.
Yeah.
It depends what demon you get, though. If you get a good spirit or a bad spirit.
I have
never... Go either way.
I have never gotten a demon through in a Ouija board. Never.
Never.
I've been on many Ouija sessions. Two of my favorites is the time that the planchet flew off the board and across the room. That was pretty funny.
What was that at?
That was at Anthony's dad.
Was I there?
You were.
But I wasn't in the room.
You got a little perturbed.
See, here's the thing. I'll go on these investigations, but you were like, let's break out. It's Halloween. Let's break out the Ouija board. I was like, Bob, I'm going to let you guys do that. I'm just going to watch Charlie Brown and Big Pumpkin over here or something.
Yeah,
like that.
No. And then the thing started swearing at us.
It
is what it is, man. It's a tool at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So that's just a little backstory on the Ouija board. I could do an entire episode on it, but we need to get to the Estes method.
Okay. Well, let's.
So let's go ahead to the last thing. This is actually my favorite form of paranormal investigation. It's my favorite. This is my favorite tool, favorite method, favorite everything. I'm very good at this, so I'm a little biased. This one comes to us from this article, and it's the name's goofy, but the information's really good.
Okay.
And it's from Halloween.
Halloween.
Yes. So it's a zine about the Halloween.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So the Estes method is a paranormal investigation technique that has gained popularity in recent years and was first developed by Carl Pfeffer during his investigation of the Stanley Hotel at Estes Park in Colorado, the same hotel that inspired Stephen King to write The Shining. The technique involves using sensory deprivation and a spirit box to communicate with potential spirits in a given location. While some see the Estes methods as a bit controversial technique, as it uses a spirit box, which can be affected by external factors, and its popularity and effectiveness has gained potential and in the evidence steadily increasing. Quick thing, guys, a spirit box, for those who don't know, it's essentially a radio that skips radio signals.
Oh, Bob,
lightning.
We've done this many times.
That is the most quintessential thing. Sorry, guys, I got a little bit of a back. So don't mind me.
For the people that were watching on Jet TV, when I flashed the cam over to myself, that means Bob's doing some stretches.
Yeah, I had to do squats.
I was wondering. You were like pointing at me. I was like,
I was going to be like, hey, you know, interrupt that nice person that called. Well, there's the person on the phone.
Tell me to flip the camera and I'll flip the camera.
This is signal for take the camera. Okay, flip it. Jeez. Anyway, so Spirit Box, it's essentially a radio frequency skipper. And it's supposed to go incredibly fast to the point where it moves at such a high rate that if a word comes through, the thought is that it might be a spirit.
It might be a spirit.
Yes. So how do you use the Estes method to perform the Estes method? One investigator wears a blindfold to limit visual stimulations or triggers, and a pair of noise-canceling headphones connected to a spirit box, which is a device used to scan through radio frequencies and believed to be a communication tool between the living and the dead. While the investigator is listening to the spirit box, other investigators call out to any potential spirits with questions. The idea is that spirits will use the spirit box white noise to communicate with less external factors, including this interaction. The sensory deprivation eliminates any stimuli that could potentially influence the blindfolded investigator's perceptions and interpretations of the spirit box responses. By removing the distractions and focusing solely on what is coming through the spirit box, investigators hope to better discern any potential messages from the spirits. It's a good idea to record your Estes methods so that responses through spirit box can be analyzed later, and also you had to record a record of what was said, whether it was received as distant direct responses to questions. Why is it unique? It's enhanced communication. Yes, this method is valued for its ability to provide a direct link of communication. It is object evidence. Paranormal investigators often face skepticism, and subjective interpretations can cloud the validity of evidence. The Estes method, with its reliance on audio communication, offers a more objective form of evidence. And it's an experimental depth. The Estes method often offers a unique experimental depth for investigators by immersing themselves in an environment devoid of external influences. And scientific exploration. The scientific community has long sought empirical evidence of paranormal phenomena. The Estes method, while not without its critics, introduces a controlled experiment within the paranormal field. Thus, it gets results. I'm not even going to read that part because the answer is yes. Count Panic, you've been with me.
I've done the
Estes method.
Yeah, we've done this a number of times, Bob. I saw you doing it multiple places. And it is kind of weird what goes on, especially the one we did in the old WJLB studio.
I tell that story a lot.
Where you were basically channeling your past broadcaster.
Exactly. You know, it's an interesting thing to do. People are always like, well, what's it like doing it? And I'm like, it's hard to explain because I'm trained to do it, right?
Yeah.
And it's almost like I let something come through me and control through me and I could talk. But you've seen me, especially Little Red Schoolhouse, full-on conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
I do that a lot, and it's something I'm really good at.
A lot of times people do that. I feel like you got to be really in tune, though, when you have that the headset on, because It's tough. Sometimes you can't really make anything out because it's just going so fast and you're picking up all these signals and just random words are popping up. But if you get somebody in tune in there, I mean, you could hear multiple coherent sentences.
Absolutely. Amazing. So count.
Well, did I have my camera on? I'm flipping the camera on.
See, we're learning.
You doing stretches threw me off. And now
sorry,
I
count. Okay. I had a backache. I'm good now.
We're going to do the show laying down next time.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It was just
that's fine.
Oh, my goodness. Now, so those are just three different methods. Now, there's tons of different methods to communicate with the dead. Some use trigger objects, which we could talk about another time. Some believe that tarot is directly used in form of communication. There's spiritual photography, yeah. Spiritual writing. There's full-on, you know, seances. It just depends on the situation.
Yeah, it does. But, you know, again, I don't know why. The Ouija board, to me, though, out of all three of those, seems like the most... controversial, popular, and controversial.
Oh, it's incredibly controversial.
I mean,
you know what? It sold a million something odd boards in the lifetime and had made Hasbro a lot of money.
They made money off the souls.
Count. It's a tool.
It's a tool.
Yes.
A vessel.
Do you have any closing words for our audience tonight, buddy?
Closing words, everybody. The veil is no longer at its thinnest.
We're back to the thickening agent until we get to Yule.
So keep tight here, hang on, and we'll be at a thin veil soon enough.
Yes, about a month and a half, we'll be back to Yule, and Yule makes things a little thinner.
Yeah,
and then nothing until spring equinox.
Yeah, and then good for a little while then.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Folks, thank you so much for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of me and Count Panckley, we just want to wish you guys all sweet dreams. To my mom, I just want to wish you a good night. Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy, comfortable doing whatever it is that you want to be doing. And to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. Remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are, not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.